Welcome to That's History, our regular segment where we look at current events and find echoes, parallels, and resonance in the past. I am Chris Cetullo, joined as always by Jonathan Zimmerman, who is a professor of history at New York University. Welcome, Jonathan.
Good to be here as always.
I was going to say maybe those are earmuffs you have on, but they're actually just headphones. But it's been pretty cold and snowy lately, and that's our topic for today, snow and what it does to the American city. Looking back into the 19th century, it may be arguable that residents of cities like Philadelphia were a little better equipped and a little calmer about snow than we tend to be in the modern day.
Yeah, they definitely were. And there are a few reasons for that. But the major one is this is before the rise of the private automobile. So cities arose along seafaring routes or later along railroad routes. And there was no expectation or indeed, in most cases, no need that every street would be cleared. What was most important was that the streets that horse carriages and later streetcars went on were cleared and later elevated railways. And that was a more distinct task. I think the other thing that's really important to note is during this same era, snowstorms also were part of the argument for creating more public transportation. So the classic example are subways. If you look at a city like New York, there was an enormous blizzard in 1888 where hundreds of people died. And we think that that became one of the prime political impetuses for the creation of the modern subway system because people said, look, we don't want this to happen again. We need a different way to get around, and it will be much more efficient and convenient to do so underground.
So after World War II, when you start to get the rise of the automobile and the building of the interstates and the move to the suburbs, the political calculus around snow and around public transportation changes fairly radically.
Yes, completely, because, of course, we start to lay out our cities according to the automobile. And the classic recent example, of course, is Atlanta, where 2 inches of snow stranded 2,000 school kids, you know, in classrooms and daycare centers and things like that. Just 2 inches. And that was because the city is entirely dependent upon and indeed laid out according to the automobile. I think it's also important to note that actually, although we associate the rise of the automobile with the Cold War and the National Highway Act, et cetera, it really begins earlier than that. It begins in the 20s and 30s, where thanks to automation and thanks to, well, a rising consumer society and thanks to other kinds of federal and state aid, the private automobile becomes common in the United States in ways it never was in any other part of the world. So we think by the end of the 1920s, there's a car for every 5 Americans, which is an amazing thing. And you compare that to, say, the United Kingdom, which was the most car-crazy place in Europe, and it's about 1 of 50. In Italy, it's 1 of 300. So this is really unique to the United States, and it changes the calculus you're talking about as early as the 1930s.
Yeah, I believe after that guy from Downton Abbey died in the car accident, it really cut into the popularity of the car in Great
Britain. That's precisely it. That's how we inched ahead, as it were, yeah. So cars are within the reach of the common man, as it were, in the United States. They become a common consumer item. And what that does is obviously it starts to alter our residential patterns, but it also alters the snow calculus because for the first time, people need to go everywhere in a sense. And so even in the 1930s, you find in mayor elections already, people losing elections because they failed to clear this little lane, which before this time, there really would have been no municipal reason to clear.
Right. And of course, the move out with people, and particularly in this period, you're talking about the rapid growth of the automobile. It is still far more true than it is today that the urban center remained the job center, the whole notion of the commute. So people are commuting longer distances to get into their jobs. It makes, you know, it makes a big difference whether you're slowed down on a 5-minute trip versus you're slowed down on a 45-minute trip.
Hugely so. And, you know, if you look at the mayors who have really suffered from snow, really that was the issue. Michael Bolandic in Chicago in the late 70s and most recently in D.C., Adrian Fenty, Luke Ravenstall in Pittsburgh. Obviously, there are many other factors that go into the political demise of a mayor. It's not easy being a big city mayor, but it is remarkable in how many cases snow plays a really important role in people's demise. It's such a focal point of public attention and criticism. So even a figure like Bloomberg in New York, otherwise quite popular and successful mayor, I think, you know, the snows really hurt him. And he didn't help his case, by the way, by suggesting that people take in a Broadway show.
Well, I think part of it, and you also could, in another weather event, look at Hurricane Katrina and see this happening with President Bush. If there's some concern about a government leader, and then they fail the weather test, it's an event around which those concerns can crystallize and find expression. And that's clearly what happened with Bush in terms of what happened in the Gulf, but it's happened with mayors around snow.
Definitely. And I think it's about snow removal becoming a government service and a municipal expectation in ways that it wasn't before, again, the rise of the private automobile. There's also something fascinating to me about snow historically because it is a focus of a lot of political criticism, but at the same time of nostalgia. At every era, when you hear people complaining about, you know, the bums who didn't pick up the snow, in the same breath you hear them waxing nostalgic about their youth mm-hmm. and how everything stopped.
Right.
Right. And that was a good thing. Mm-hmm. Right. Now it's bad because I got to get to work. Right. When I was a kid, it was awesome. We had a snow day and we had snow fights and it was a beautiful trip down memory lane. And we do that in the same breath.
Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, there have been a few mayors who got early credit by handling a snowstorm. I know it may be hard for some of our listeners to remember this, but there was a period when John Street had a honeymoon and he was extremely popular. And part of that was shortly after he took office, there was a big snowstorm and the city did a far better and more energetic job of clearing the streets than they had under Ed Rendell, who famously told Philadelphians on side streets to stop whining and shovel the snow themselves.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you know, Rendell, it was kind of a throwback in a way, right? He said, listen, if you don't live on, you know, Broad Street or on a major thoroughfare, it's not going to be our job to clean up for you. It's going to be your job. Mm-hmm. And I guess Street during this honeymoon period actually cleaned some of those streets and got a little boost.
Right. He took a lot of – he figured out a way to get like a portable plow and put it on the front of a lot of smaller city vehicles, much smaller than the big snow plows. They could get down some tertiary streets. But, you know, like the snow, that burst of popularity evaporated for Mayor Street eventually. But he did have his moment in the sun because of how he handled a blizzard. What would you say are going to be the consequences of this particular enduringly bad winter politically? Anybody who's in trouble?
Kasim Reed in Atlanta is in very big trouble. I mean, he, you know, the old Michael Kinsley cliche, the worst scandals happen when you tell the truth. After that 2-inch snowstorm, you know, he got on TV and they said, well, you know, what are you going to do about this? And he said, well, I can't do that much because actually most of the people who are stranded don't live in my city. Mm-hmm. And of course, that was accurate and highly impolitic of him to say. And it just has to do, again, with the rise of the exurbs in Atlanta, obviously the consequence of the civil rights revolution and lots of white people moving to very distant places. But nevertheless, as you were saying, have to commute in. This is a guy when he was at Howard famously told all of his roommates that, you know, he was going to be a mayor and I think then a senator and something mm-hmm. higher than that. Hugely skilled and ambitious guy. It's not looking good for Mayor Reed. And part of the reason is actually he was hamstrung by the fact that he's, you know, maybe 10% of metropolitan Atlanta lives in Kasim Reed City.
We've been talking to Jonathan Zimmerman of New York University about snow and politics and the history thereof. One final question, John. So you live up in Narberth, right?
Indeed.
And how did the good borough fathers of Narberth do in plowing your streets?
I feel extremely fortunate. It doesn't keep people from complaining. But if you look at the long history of snow removal and you look at the services I receive in so many different areas, schools, trash, and indeed snow, it's really good. So thank you, Narberth.
And thank you, John Zimmerman.
All right. Thanks. It's been fun.